Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Carol Corey. She's making a return visit. She specializes in subjects such as health and nutrition. And recently she did a book about the healing power of chocolate. And tonight, which it is for me in the UK, we're going to talk about the healing power of honey. So welcome to the program again, Cal.
Hello, good evening.
Right. I think it might be a good place to start here, rather than dive straight into the healing powers of honey, to talk about the other subject that's obviously related to it, and that is the mysterious death of bees, which I gather has been going on since 2006. Now, tell us what you know about that and what your own feelings are as to the cause of it.
Well, actually, it's called colony collapse disorder. And basically, this is a condition which causes honeybees to colonies to vanish without trace. They just go AWOL. They leave. Kind of like the sci-fi movies, The Happening and I Am Legend, where you get images of human and animal extinction. And to this day, beekeepers, scientists, you name it, they don't know why it's happening. I interviewed beekeepers, and it's heartbreaking to hear these people talk about how they've had they have colonies. 50,000 to 60,000 bees are in one colony, and they have all these bees just die, just vanish, leave. I mean, this is their livelihood. This is how they make their money. Plus, they get close to their bees. So it's just very mysterious. I did read, though, the other day that some people believe this has been happening for 50 or 60 years, but it really didn't start making the news until 2006, where they tagged it colony collapse disorder. And nobody knows exactly why it's happening, but there are a lot of theories.
Right. I gather, in fact, from your own information that on one particular day, September the 26th this year, that 12 million bees died. I mean, that is absolutely incredible.
Right, and the UK's Daily Mail, is it? They reported,
yes,
that, actually, up to 12 million bees dropped dead. I read a follow-up article yesterday, or the day before, October 5th, I believe, where the experts are definitely looking into it, the agricultural people, and they are saying it is not the colony collapse disorder, because that's when the bees just vanish. These bees, they drop dead literally right in front. They have a picture of the beekeeper in Florida. I forget the name of his company, but he's kneeling down. He has handfuls of dead bees. That's not what happens necessarily with the colony collapse disorder. That's where the bees go, and you never find them again, correct? So now they're thinking that these bees were either poisoned or it was pesticide, but it's under investigation, so we won't know for a while. We may never know. But they're definitely excluding colony collapse disorder for this just recent happening, which is quite frightening. And again, disheartening. My heart goes out to these beekeepers because they're so hardworking. You know, this is their livelihood. Not only do they use the bees for honey, which they sell, excuse me, they transport the bees so they pollinate. They transport them out so they pollinate crops and they make their money that way as well. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, a lot of people I talk to believe that transportation of the bees could be one cause of the colony collapse disorder, that the bees just can't handle it. You know, going out of their habitat, traveling thousands and thousands of miles to do their double job of pollination, some people believe that that could be one of the reasons why, you know, it's happening, that the bees are, you know, dying.
But you would think that since they must have been moved around for many years, that it would be strange if all of a sudden they started dying from it.
That's true. You have a point. Other theories include climate change, that which is very interesting, diet, mites, pesticides, definitely a big one, and viruses. But then again, like in the book I'm reading, what I wrote, also the stress of traveling for pollination of crops and the usage, oh, you'll love this one, of cell phones, perhaps due to the radiation. I know. Well, they even say women get breast cancer. They were saying that years ago from cell phones and hot tubs, that they get breast cancer from that. So they're saying that perhaps due to the radiation. These are some of the mixed bag of possibilities for why the bees are MIA, missing in action. I interviewed a scientist, very high-profile scientist at UC Davis here in Northern California. And they have a huge, they have 6 million bees that they're doing a research project on. They're working with Haagen-Dazs ice cream and another really big candy company that are giving them actually money to do this. So it's a huge project. And he told me in the book, none of us know why the bees are not as vital as they used to be. In many cases, this may be due to limited access to a good, varied supply of pollens. Now, that's interesting. Now, this Dr. Munson, he hopes in our lifetime scientists will discover what is killing the honeybees. But he told me, even if we find the cause, get this, will we be able to overcome it? So that's kind of scary. Then I went on and I interviewed Bee Culture magazine editor Ken Slotum. He's an author as well on beekeepers and how to become a beekeeper. He says researchers, beekeepers, and concerned citizens all over the world have come together to resolve the health issues of our honeybees that our honeybees face. He also adds that researchers have uncovered many of the causes contributing to the problem regarding honeybee nutrition, safety, genetics, that's another factor, and habitat requirements. He's being optimistic. He's hoping that we're going to find how to deal with this. And basically, he and the other beekeepers I talked to, they're saying to stay clear from the chemical-laden artificial world of modern agriculture, which is kind of hard to do. I mean, you know, even the produce that we eat. I mean, I made this apple honey cake because I do a column every week where I cook something with the superfoods that I write about, and it was Jewish holiday, you know, September 28th, so I made an apple honey cake, and I went and got apple juice and apples to use, and then I read an article that the pesticides of apples are making apples unhealthy for the humans. So, you know, it's not just the bees. Pesticides, they affect humans, too, with our produce. It's a scary thing. And a lot of people, you know, they buy organic produce thinking they're safe. But I don't know. I don't think any of us really know.
And it's clearly a very serious problem. But there was a time over here in England when there was some interest in the possibility that it could be mites, and they seem to have found some proof. But when you go back to this incident on September 26th this year, when 12 million bees died on that day, it rather precludes that possibility. Do you think there might be some evidence in these sort of chemical sprays that...
Yeah, definitely. As an intuitive, the girl that goes on radio to predict earthquakes and, you know, earth changes. Mankind, I do believe that mankind could have tampered with this. It's just too weird. You know, it's an isolated incident. True colony collapse disorder is worldwide, but again, that's different, and they've already said that's not what it is. The bees didn't disappear this time. The bees died right there where you could see them. And that's totally different from colony collapse disorder. So I believe that it was poison. You know, I think you've heard about actually people stealing other beekeepers' hives. I mean, they can make money off that. So I believe tampering, pesticides or poison is definitely something to consider. And that's what my gut instinct tells me. Not that it's something strange like from, you know, an extraterrestrial or something like that.
Yes.
I don't think E.T. got his hands into this one now.
No. I would go along with what your opinion is there. And although I don't think we have the same level of chemtrails over here as you do in the States, it also makes you wonder whether that adds to the problem, doesn't it?
You know, I almost included that in the book, and then I took it out. I didn't want to go there, but a lot of people do believe in that. I know on Coast to Coast, people that go on there, like Jim Berglund, geologist, he definitely believes in chemtrails. I really haven't followed that much. Chemtrails, basically, what is it in layperson terminology? I think I know, but I want to hear what you say chemtrails are.
Well, I don't know exactly what they contain because they are, to some extent, kept secret. I mean, we're not supposed to really be aware that they're spraying, I think it is, things like barium and other chemicals into the atmosphere, allegedly at times to bring about a cooling effect, on other times to present some sort of defense against some likely attack from aliens. So there's been one or two odd reasons put forward.
Okay, here we go. I'm looking at chemtrail trails. Conspiracy. Actually, some people believe it's from the government, too.
Yes.
Correct? And, I talked about that the other night on another show. Yeah, I believe in that. The United States Air Force maintains that this theory is a hoax. But it's been investigated by universities, scientific organizations, so there's a lot of controversy behind it. I believe that the chemical or biological agents, you know, doing tests for whatever, crop dusting, cloud seeding, and so why wouldn't the bees be affected? For sure they would be.
Yes.
I should have included that in the book. Why didn't you tell me? I should have included that. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'll talk about that more on radio. Why didn't I include that? Oh, darn.
Well, there you are. You published the book too quickly. Right. Now, is what is happening a real danger to our food chain?
I was just thinking that right before you said that. Yes, I don't think the average person knows how important that little honeybee is. In the book I describe, it's been estimated by the USDA that 80% of insect crop pollination is done by the hardworking honeybees. That's a lot. So we're talking about one-third of the total human diet comes from insect-pollinated plants, including fruits, legumes, vegetables, all the good, healthful stuff that I love to eat, being an almost vegan. And, I mean, take away, let's just say hypothetically that the honeybee is gone tomorrow. All of our food, I mean, gone. All the good food is gone. Actually, what's interesting, this was not proven, so I didn't include it in the book, but a lot of people give credit to Albert Einstein for saying that if the bee disappears off the surface of the globe, then man would only have 4 years of life left. Now, the Albert Einstein people say that quote is undetermined, that he really said it, but you hear it all the time. So it really makes you think, you know, and again, even if he didn't say it, just after what I said, how much food is pollinated by this insect, it wouldn't be good if the bee totally is gone.
No, it's clearly an extremely serious situation.
Correct.
And you couldn't put anything in its place, could you? What could you do?
And also, it goes further than just the produce. The almond crop prevalent in California where I live, also relies on honeybee pollination.
Oh,
and they get
yes.
this. Don't now you might okay, for people out there that love their meat and they're thinking, oh well, who cares? Don't forget most beef and dairy products enjoyed in the United States and where you're at too count on insect pollinated legumes such as alfalfa and clover. I mean, this just goes, it's bigger than just like one crop. It's just, it's a lot. It's 90 crops at least that would be affected. It just, it's very widespread, the pollination factor. And the fact that the honeybee population is declining, it's really scary. There's been documentaries on it, watching the beekeepers actually go out of business and losing their livelihood. You can imagine, it's like a farmer. I mean, losing, you know, losing what, you know, what they harvest. You know, all that work. It's just, it's a big deal.
Absolutely. Now, I can tell you from my own experience this year, because I grow about a dozen tomato plants every year, that the number of tomatoes I've had was probably about half of what I would normally expect. And I put that down to the lack of the number of bees who are pollinating the flowers on the plants.
Right.
That shows you how serious it is, doesn't it, really?
It is. It's funny. During the research of this book, I received honey from all around the world. I mean, just there's so many varieties, and I discussed more than 30, all from different, you know, different types of flowers. There's just so many types of honeys and different flavors. And the yes. darker ones appear to be healthier than the lighter ones. And it takes a sophisticated palate to get used to it. But if you're a health fanatic, you can force yourself to get used to the darker honey so that are better for you with more antioxidants. But I started thinking, I interviewed this one beekeeper, and he told me how 50% of his bees died due to colony collapse disorder. And I swear he was almost crying on the phone. It was just, it really moved me to show you how real it is. I mean, I watched it in a documentary, but I never interviewed somebody like that. So then I started thinking, oh my God, this beekeeper, he sent me his honey. So me, the hypochondriac, I started freaking thinking, oh God, can I get it? Can I get this? I mean, but it doesn't make sense because the bees vanish. So what am I going to do, vanish? But I'm wondering if it's, who knows? And so I contacted again the editor, author at the Bee Culture magazine, and I said, is it safe? I mean, you know, is this honey that I have, is it safe? And he basically said, to date, honey hasn't been found to have these chemicals involved because the chemicals are soluble in wax, not water. So that's good. And so it seems CCD, colony collapse disorder, isn't really affecting what we eat. It's affecting the bees, but it's not affecting the product, if that makes sense. So I felt a little bit better, but still, you never know. It's kind of like, remember back in 1982 when the AIDS epidemic came out. Nobody really knew. Nobody trusted anybody. I mean, we used to think that, you know, at first heterosexuals couldn't get AIDS. Then we thought, oh my God, you could get it from drinking a cup of water that somebody that's been infected has. We didn't know. And I feel it's the same thing with the CCD. Nobody really knows what's going on.
Right.
So there can be some paranoia.
Well, now we're actually getting into the healing power of honeys, etc. Perhaps we could stay on that side now. So I'd like to ask you a question. Does all honey have the same degree of healing properties?
Well, that's controversial. Now, I include large commercial companies like Subi, huge. They've been around forever. I mean, decades and decades and decades. And that's the kind of honey you get at your grocery store, a large grocery store, and the little bear. Now, compare that to what I got 50 miles from me from a local beekeeper, the raw stuff, the pure, raw, unprocessed honey. I mean, right from the honeycomb that I tasted. Big difference, big difference. Why? You get supposedly more antioxidants, more minerals and vitamins than the stuff that's been processed. But that makes sense. It just makes sense. You want to eat, you don't want to eat more processed foods than you have to. But still, any honey is healthier than high fructose corn syrup or table sugar. So, you know, if you can't get pure raw honey, and not everyone can, the type of honey that you get at your grocery store, again, is a lot better than table sugar. A lot right, better, so, which is refined and processed.
So can honey be used quite often in place of sugar in sort of recipes?
Definitely. I'm sure that when you bake and cook, which I have, you lose some of the antioxidants just like you do when you use olive oil, another superfood, or dark chocolate. It's healthier to eat it, you know, in its regular state before you, you know, bake it and cook all the antioxidants away. I do have lots of recipes, but I'm sure it's healthier to drizzle like honey, dark honey, over fresh fruit rather than using honey in cookies. However, on the upside is when you bake with honey, like in cookies or a cake, you can use less honey than you would sugar. So you're getting less added sugar in your diet. And you don't want to have too much added sugar in your daily diet, which isn't healthy. Nutritionists have told me that the most you should have really for a woman is five teaspoons per day. And I think a man a little bit more, because usually men weigh more by the weight. And, you know, 5 teaspoons really isn't a lot if you think about it. You could have a teaspoon of honey in tea in the morning. You could have a teaspoon of honey tea in the afternoon. You could drizzle some honey on fresh fruit for, you know, dessert or a snack. And then you could have a dark chocolate honey truffle. And there you go. And it's really, again, 21 calories. Well, I didn't even think I said this. 21 calories per teaspoon. So nice. You don't gain a lot of weight from honey. Plus, it curbs your sweet tooth. So rather than going for, like, you know, empty nutrition, sweet rolls or donuts or cakes at a bakery that have been processed and not homemade, if you do the honey the way I just mentioned, you're going to stay lean. And it is heart healthy. I mean, I'm 120 pounds, size 4, 5'5". And, you know, I don't eat any more honey than I mentioned. So, right. You know, I'm one person, but there's reports or studies that definitely honey can help you stay lean. It's heart healthy. It's even good for diabetes. Let me go to this section. I have a whole chapter on section on all the major life-threatening diseases that it's really good for. Right. Obesity. Okay. Again, I already gave you, it helps you satisfy your sweet cravings, so you're not going to overindulge in fattening and sugaring foods without nutritional value. Heart disease, it's good for that because it has the antioxidants, the good guys that are found in superfoods, especially in dark honey, which helps lower the risk of high blood pressure and high cholesterol. For diabetes, now that, I'm sure you've read diabetes too, not juvenile diabetes, but diabetes too, what the baby boomers and elderly people are getting now. If you're overweight, you're definitely prone to getting diabetes too, which isn't fun. You don't want to do the insulin thing. But if you do, if you consume honey in moderation, especially the dark varieties, it can cut the amount of the bad, the LDL cholesterol in the blood, which may lower the risk of developing the type 2 diabetes. Cancer, again, it's the antioxidants that may hinder the cancer process and maybe do certain cancers. And aging, it just makes sense. If you stave off, you know, obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and cancer, I mean, obviously you're going to live longer.
Right.
And what I'm saying, it's not just off the top of my head. I mean, there's just tons and tons of studies, not on lab rats, I'm sure there are some, but on humans, on humanoids, that prove that honey does have, you know, these good effects for the body.
Right. Now, I tend to have honey every day in the morning, usually with my breakfast, which is fruit or something of that nature. And I buy Manuka honey. Which
I was just thinking about that. It's so weird. Yeah. You can tell. Now, I have it. I'll send you mine. I do not like the taste of it. Now, you can ingest it the lower levels, but the higher levels can only be used topically, which are awesome for superbugs. And it's used in hospitals in Australia and New Zealand. And right. You actually eat the Manuka honey, though? You do?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I put a large teaspoon, because I cheat a little bit, onto my yogurt with my fruit in the mornings, yes. Every day.
You're brave. Your palate's very sophisticated. No, I couldn't do that. I tried it, and I did do buckwheat honey. That's another one that's very high in antioxidants, but Manuka, you're ahead of the game. My God. kudos to you. You're going to live a very long, long life.
Oh, thank you very much. Now, you mentioned about the, I call it the higher numbers. What is the significance of those numbers? Like if it says I use, I think, plus 5 or 7, then I notice some
somewhere
more. You get more expensive.
The higher ones, they do a disclaimer, you cannot use this ingested. I think it's after 10. You can't ingest it. You only can use it topically for skin infections like that superbug. How do you pronounce that? That MRSA, like a staph infection that people are getting and that are antibiotic resistant. That's what you use it for. And they sent me these companies in New Zealand and Australia. They sent me the Manuka honey and made it very clear that it's only used for topical use.
Interesting.
But it's awesome, supposedly. I think I used it myself. I think I cut my finger or my foot or something. Oh, it was my foot in the summer. And I used it, and I swear to God, within 2 days it was healed. It was awesome. And I remember my brother, who's a skeptic, he doesn't believe in all my natural remedies, like apple cider vinegar, but it always works. It works, and it's the same thing with honey because it has antibacterial properties, and that's why people use it topically, and that's why doctors and scientists are saying to use it topically, and Manuka is definitely one of the main ones to use. It's not the only one by any means. But it's the top of the line, and it's expensive, mind you. It is expensive.
It is, yeah. I think it's an acquired taste. To me, I can only describe it as having a taste that is a little bit like an antiseptic. I can't think of any other word that describes it. It's quite powerful, but it's like anything you have. You can get used to it.
Correct, that's true, but there's ones to start off with that are a little bit easier on the palate. I'm looking at these in the first chapter. I just do a real quick, the Healing Honey Parade, just kind of a rundown of what you're going to see throughout the book. And sunflower, it's yellow and has medicine value in it. My dogs are saying hello. And raspberry is definitely good. Manuka, which is dark amber orange. Hawaiian Christmas berry, goldenrod, buckwheat, blueberry. These are all really good, and they're easier. So if you start off with those, you'll get more used to it. Just like I think we have some sort of visitors, or I live in the wild with raccoons and bears and coyotes and feral cats. I have two Britneys that get a little bit excited, but they're all saying hello to you. All right, honey for pets. That's what they wanted me to say. I actually have a recipe I include from veterinarians on there's something homemade, a little homemade treat you can make with honey. So honey's good for pets. Not, you don't want to, you know, put tons of honey in their food, but in a treat, you'll definitely see it as one of the ingredients, right. You know, a small amount. And also topically, if Fido or Fluffy has like a superficial scratch, I'm not talking about an abscess or something terrible that you should run to the vet for, but if you're out in the wild or, you know, in a fix and it's some type of scratch that you could maybe stay on top of, and if you have Manuka honey, definitely for pets. And I've had scientists, a very well-known one, Peter Molin, I think he's in New Zealand, he granted me an interview. Definitely you can put it on the cat or dog's skin. And just a little bit, and you definitely can see some healing going on.
Right.
You know, honey is nothing new. I mean, this goes back, the healing powers goes back as far as 5,000 years ago by the Egyptians. So this isn't just something new. But the 21st century people are realizing that, you know, honey is not bad. It's good for you. You know, we kind of forgot about it, and then we're bringing it back.
Can you put it directly onto, say, burns of any description?
Say again, repeat or rephrase.
Can you put the honey directly onto burns or something of that nature? I mean, you can put it on cuts or open areas where you've perhaps wounded yourself. But what about if you burn yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I have the home cures because it has the antibacterial properties, definitely. I haven't done that. I haven't burned myself much, but we're coming into winter here. So when I make the fires, I'll probably burn myself. And thank you for reminding me. And I'll use that Manuka honey if I don't send it to you. And, yeah, you definitely can do that. Burns right here, number 10, definitely. Apply Manuka honey or a first aid, with the Manuka honey on the burned area.
Right. That's fine.
Actually, this is what I read. Manuka honey, sometimes this is really cool. This I did do this. Yeah. That's what I applied on my foot when I cut it. These Manuka honey companies, they make a lot of different products using the honey, and they put it like in lotions, which is easier. It's not as gooey and messy. But again, if you're out in the wild and that's all you have, of course you're going to use it. But the lotions are more girly and easier and smell nicer and are easier to apply. And so I use that first aid lotion, again, expensive, on the burn. You can use it on the burned area. Right. And, you know, there's this famous doctor, the Vermont country doctor, D.C. Jarvis, back in the 50s. He recommends honey. I don't think he's alive any longer, but his books are still alive. And he recommends honey for burns because it can relieve the painful smarting and stave off blisters and speed up the healing process of the burned area. So it definitely can be done for that. And for cold sores, for coughs. They're even saying for depression because of the different compounds in it can help improve your mood. Honey has amino acids, which are found in honey and bee pollen, and these can help boost the mood. There you go.
Does it make any difference when you're using honey for any type of use, whether it's what I would call runny honey or set?
I have all different forms, the creamed honey, which is fun, or the gooey. I don't think it really matters what form it's in. The very serious people, the bee people, they actually eat the honeycomb. I have it, but it's, again, it's an acquired. It tastes good, but it's so gummy. It's strange. The beekeeper I visited, he was eating the honeycomb, but again, it's a very chewy texture. The cream is nice. It comes in all different forms. And I just think it's really a personal preference thing. It's subjective. It's just on what you like. I feel that everyone is different. The syrupy kind is probably easier to put in tea, and for cooking and baking, you know, it's just easier. The thicker, like if you have cornbread, spreading a cream type of honey is really awesome, or on a scone. Actually, I went through the creamed honeys quite fast. I did like the texture. It was fun. Mm. It was very fun. Again, I have to mention that honey is expensive, and I've had some people tell me that, you know, too bad it's expensive, just like dark chocolate. But again, keep in mind, you wouldn't want a lot. If right now, if any of you who are listening would just eat one teaspoon of honey, that's it. You just couldn't sit there and eat a whole jar full of honey, Winnie the Pooh. You just wouldn't. It's just too, I don't really want to say rich, but it satiates your sweet tooth. Mm.
I think rich sums it up, really. Now, honey seems to last for a long time without deteriorating. But does it make
awesome.
Any difference to the value of it for healing or for any other thing like cooking?
No. They used to use honey to embalm people, and the shelf life is so forever. It's not like chocolate, you know, or even I just finished my latest book on coffee, which doesn't have as long a shelf life at all, unfortunately. But no, honey has an awesome shelf life. The worst thing that can happen is it'll crystallize. You still can eat it. Some people say heat it up and you'll get rid of the crystallization. I kind of like it when it's crystallized. It's kind of crunchy. But I'm not sure if everybody's like that, if they like the crystallization of it. But no, the shelf life, it's great. I do believe, though, in grocery stores, they do probably put an expiration date on it, probably because of the crystallization. And you do want to store it in a dark, cool place. I mean, you don't want to put all your honeys out in some bright light in the kitchen. You want to store it in a cool, dark place in pantry. So to prevent the crystallization, for sure.
Since you've spoken about the healing power of chocolate, and I know dark chocolate is better than milk chocolate, do you think that if people made something like chocolate flapjacks or something of that nature, they'd be getting the best of both worlds?
Oh, you mean, actually I did that. How did you know that? I did that. How did you know? You know, you're psychic, aren't you? This is too weird. Everything you're saying, it's either I thought of or you picked up on. About a month ago, for that column I write every week for the Tahoe Daily Tribune, What's Cooking at Kelly's Cabin, I made homemade flapjacks, pancakes. I will never buy the box stuff again. It is so easy to make your own pancakes with whole wheat flour, with organic brown eggs, organic whole milk, and honey. And instead of using maple syrup, which does have some benefits, I just drizzled it with honey and I used dark chocolate chips in the pancakes. And because it cooks so quickly, the pancakes, I mean, just a minute you flip it over, I did get the best of both worlds. I got the dark chocolate and I drizzled it with honey without baking it. And it was amazing. Amazing. And I thought, why for all these years have I been buying these, you know, box mixes that say complete mix, add water. But if you look on the side of the box, there's a million artificial ingredients that you can't even pronounce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a worry, isn't it, sometimes?
You
mentioned maple syrup there. Now, I seem to remember that also is a very good medical type syrup. I don't know what its qualifications
are. That's
what
I read recently. Is that going to be my new Healing Powers book? I don't know. 320 pages on syrup. Please don't make me do it. Please don't make me do it, Mr. Editor.
Okay.
They were going to make me do wine, and I don't drink. I never have, so I didn't have to do wine. And what else have they brought to the table? Seaweed. That was years ago. I never had to do that. I don't know. The coffee one that comes out next year, I'm in love with the coffee book. Oh, God, I'm so into coffee now, I can't tell you. And coffee is very helpful for you. But I'm not sure what healing power food will be next. And now that this is a series and it's gone beyond a trilogy, I'm going to have to really start thinking. I was thinking of herbal tea, which I love, and I was also thinking of spices, but both of those have been done a lot, a lot.
Now, is your book about coffee also going to be called The Healing Power of Coffee?
Yeah, it's done. It's done. It's submitted. It's with the salespeople. The cover's done. I haven't seen the graphics, but the copy on the cover is already done. It's in the works.
Give us a quick preview and tell us why coffee is healthy for us. I mean, without giving away too many details.
Right, because that'll have to be next year, August 2012, yes. Before the world ends on December 21st. coffee, again, it's a superfood, just like all the other ones I wrote about. You know, it started off with vinegar, olive oil, dark chocolate, honey, and coffee. They all have the same Mediterranean diet and lifestyle theme. You know, they're used in European countries. They all go back to, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago, if not biblical times. Honey goes to biblical times. Coffee, not so much, but it definitely goes back thousands and thousands of years. I believe the Egyptians, I traced it to the Egyptians, are the first ones that came across it, I think. But again, I just finished writing it and submitting, but I think that's what it is. But again, it has all the antioxidants, and it used to get a bad rap in the late 50s, because people would say, if you have high blood pressure, it's going to make it sore, it's going to give you insomnia, you know, you'll get jittery, you'll get irritable, all these terrible things. But now there's a new school of thought, tons of research, I mean, so many groundbreaking studies that I got to use in the book, proving that no, and even breast cancer. I mean, back in the day, I remember doctors would tell me you can't drink coffee or eat dark chocolate because it can give you fibrocystic, you know, lumpy breast, which can maybe lead to breast cancer. But now they're not saying that. There's a study saying in reverse that women that drink coffee, it can help lower the risk of developing breast cancer and prostate cancer for men. As well, there's just a study that came out a few weeks ago about how it can lower the depression in women. And I tell you, every morning I drink fresh brewed coffee. I grind the beans now, and I drink about probably 9 ounces with organic milk. And I can't see life without it. I don't overdo. I don't drink up to 5 cups a day, which they say you can. I just don't need it because I'm type A person. I have a lot of energy. On occasion, I'll drink maybe another cup in the afternoon, but one large cup in the morning is just fine. It's totally fine.
Now, I think the question there is, or has to be, does it make any difference whether it's decaffeinated or
no,
the original with the caffeine?
Good question. No, the studies that I looked at included a lot of them. There's definitely properties in decaf as much as regular coffee. However, I was sent decaf coffee, and I could put that in that package to you too with the Manuka honey. I can't see drinking decaf coffee. I'm really a tea gal, and I would much rather drink chamomile tea. Or green tea, black tea, any kind of tea. I love tea over decaf. I just don't get it. But it does have the good properties in the studies. So if you are a decaf drinker or you don't want the caffeine, which actually the caffeine in a lot of these studies is helpful for, you know, staving off ailments and disorders, diseases. So, but there's like 181 compounds, I believe, in coffee, and more than that. Those are the founded ones, the most popular ones that help keep people healthy and that are shown in some of these studies. But it's basically, again, the antioxidants, and there's so many. So it's just like the other superfoods. But again, a lot of people don't know this. They think that drinking coffee is a vice. Where it becomes unhealthy, however, is when people, they go for all the artificial flavorings and tons of whipped cream, and put, you know, lots and lots of sugar, added sugar into it. That's when it becomes unhealthy. It's no longer coffee. They're ruining it. You know, it's just like eating dark chocolate, 70% cacao content. You know, that's healthy. But if you eat a Milky Way milk chocolate bar, that's not so healthy. You're getting just sugar and fat. And the same thing with coffee. So that's where the problem comes in, is if you load it up with tons of cream, flavoring, sugar, then, you know, you're ruining the, you know, the coffee itself.
Well, you're certainly altering the taste. What about milk? I mean, does milk make any difference to it?
I include a whole section on milk, and I have a whole chart about milk. And milk is definitely, it doesn't, like, I'm sure you've heard that if you put milk in tea, there's some people that believe that you ruin some of the antioxidant benefits you get from tea. But with coffees, they say you don't. And milk obviously does have good things such as protein and calcium, which both men and women need. Both men and women can get osteoporosis, you know, bone loss as they age. And children need milk, but children don't really need coffee. However, a lot of children or teenagers will start drinking coffee. I know I did in my teens. I started off with coffee ice cream as a kid, and I think most children do that. But again, it's an acquired taste. Most kids, young kids, don't really like coffee. That's another thing about honey. We have a disclaimer that's very important. I got them to, the editors, to put it on one of the first pages. Warning, warning, warning. to avoid infant botulism, do not feed honey to a baby who is younger than 1 year. That's very, very important. For some reason, it can cause botulism, and it can be even lethal. So I put it on one of the main pages so people would see this. And you'll see this in other honey books, too. Anybody in the honey business knows this. It's just a no-no for infants.
All right, you'll have to tell me now. What is botulism?
Botulism, what is that? You get that even in canned foods. Haven't you heard that when you, there's a dent in a canned food, they say throw it out because you get botulism. It's like a poisoning. I want to say it's a food poisoning. You've heard of botulism, haven't you?
I've heard of it, yes. I wasn't sure what it was.
Botulism. Also, it's an illness. It's a toxin. I'm looking at Wikipedia right now. But it's rare. It can actually paralyze you. It's a toxin and enters the body and the digestive tract in children. Infant botulism or adults, but honey, it doesn't affect adults. It's a foodborne botulism, contamination. It could lead to being paralyzed. Starts with the muscles of the face and then spreads towards the limbs. Not fun. Affects breathing muscles and respiratory failure. It's lethal, botulism. Pictures are kind of, on Wikipedia, are kind of freaky. Right. You know, now, for people that want to get this book in the UK, you can get it. You actually have an Amazon.co.uk. Did you know that?
Yes, I did, actually. Yes, yes.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. But yeah, you can get this book. I saw that there today. If you get it in Kindle. Actually, I do have a Kindle. I don't.
Don't recall that one, no.
The Kindle, you know, the little, it's a little computer thing.
Oh, yes, yes, hold on, yes. I've never used one, and I haven't got one. I know what you mean now. Yes, we do.
Yeah, I don't have one either. I kind of like the traditional books. I'm old-fashioned girl, but they're becoming very popular, and it is available in Kindle format as well for the people that are moving forward with technology.
Right. Can people buy your books direct from your site as well?
They can, but I post this thing free shipping. So if I send something to the UK, I think it's going to cost an arm and a leg and a Siamese cat and two Britneys to get it over there. I think it would be more practical to get it through Amazon. It looks fairly inexpensive. I don't know if the dollar value is different in the UK than America, but it looks less in cost than it is here.
It will be expensive to post it, that is certain. Now, is there anything that you think you should add to what we have spoken about with honey that we might have overlooked? Because we're coming very rapidly to the end of our program.
Right. In the book, and what I learned, the honeybee's awesome. Candles, beeswax candles. I was sent so many just beautiful candles, and they're healthier. The natural beeswax candles that have been used for centuries, they're healthier than artificial candles. Beauty, I got to take a Manuka bath at a 5-star hotel, a Manuka bath. It was just wonderful, and it makes your skin so silky. It was in a bear claw jacuzzi tub, and Cleopatra is known to do a milk and honey bath. So there's so many products out there online, I include in the book, or you could go online and find all these products that include honey from head to toe that women and men can use just to make your hair, your skin so soft and healthy. But you can also do the home treatment and just use regular honey like we're talking about, and I have recipes for that too. So choose for beauty and for household eco-friendly things. It's so versatile. It's amazing. Honey's amazing. It's got bee healthy powers, things that you would have never thought of. And the recipes, oh, I have good news, good news, good news. This book was actually accepted by the Good Cook Book Club and One Spirit Book Club, and I just saw it last night. And there's dozens of recipes by spa chefs. I do include a few of my own, but they're basically tried and tested recipes by major bee companies to spa chefs from health spas around the nation. So if you like to cook and bake, the recipes will wow you for sure.
Cal, I'm going to have to stop you there. And thank you very much for coming onto the program.
Okay.
It's been very interesting talking about the bees and their problems. So thank you very, very much. And I wish you every success with the book, because it's only just come out. And your website is www.calorey.com, and that's C-A-L-O-R-E-Y. In case somebody wants to note it. So thank you very much, Cal. It's been very enjoyable.
Thank you. I'll see you next year for coffee.
That would be nice, yes. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, all right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, friends, that was very interesting, a little bit different to some of the subjects I normally discuss. Next week, I've got a comparatively well-known author coming on, Hazel Courtney, and she's going to discuss her latest book, which is called Countdown to Coherence. It's a spiritual journey towards a scientific theory of everything. She's a lovely lady, a nice speaker, and I'm looking forward to being with her next week. Thank you for being with me today. I do hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.